You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/ARTS. Just go to Indeed.com/ARTS right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Culture Map presents... What's Eric Eating? From the Gal Media Studios in Houston, Texas, here's Culture Map food editor Eric Sandler.
Welcome to a very special episode of What's Eric Eating. As always, I'm your host, Culture Map food editor Eric Sandler. We're going to break the format a little bit this week because I have invited all of my usual co-hosts to join me to talk about the year in food. We're going to go over our best new restaurants, our favorite dishes, some of the restaurants that maybe reasserted themselves that opened in previous years. We're going to talk about the restaurants that closed that we're going to miss, and we'll probably even trash a couple of places and tell you how terrible their food was. Let me introduce our panel one by one, starting with Mary Clarkson, the owner of La Olivier on Lower Westheimer.
Hello, everybody. Happy to be here.
Nathan Ketchum, a local restaurant consultant.
How's it going?
Shanna Jones, one half of the dynamic blogging duo that is Urban Swank.
What's up?
And of course, we would not be complete if we did not have your partner in blogging, Felice Sloan.
Hey, 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 hey.
All right, y'all. So I've given you a little bit of an agenda. We're going to go through one by one, starting with everybody's picks for the three best new restaurants that opened this year. Felice, why don't we start with you? What was your number one restaurant that opened this year?
Oh my God, this was so hard. So I'm glad you gave us more than one choice. So I would say Starfish was one of my top restaurants for this year. Field and Tides, and then One Fit. Steak.
All right.
Yes.
Nathan, how does that compare to your list?
All right. So I did four, not three, because I'm cool like that. And mine are Starfish, Oxbow, Riel, and Zochi.
All right, Shanna. Mm.
Oh. Yeah, I said I'm cool, so deal with it.
Well, clearly we have some heavy hitters because we're overlapping. So I have Riel, I have Alice Blue, and I have Field and Tides.
And then, Mary, how about you?
All right. Maybe some of mine were going to overlap, but I'm going to make sure that mine don't for the most part here. Theodore Rex, for me, was a favorite. BLT, or Better Luck Tomorrow, I'm going to put that out there now that they're doing brunch service, which is where I'm super happy at. And Oxbow 7.
All right. And then my three, Riel, Aki, and Sochi. A lot of overlap. I think we've built some consensus around Sochi.
And Riel.
Riel.
And Starfish.
And
Oxbow. So those are the best three.
Right.
Best four.
You threw four.
I made
in
it
there.
Four.
So if you would have threw four, it may have been three, but you messed it up by doing four.
I didn't mess it up and made it better.
Okay.
Top four.
Felice, what is it about Starfish that stood out for you?
Just they're doing seafood very, very well. I mean, anywhere you go on the menu, from the appetizers to the specials to the pastas to the entree, there are hits, hit after hit after hit, and it's consistent.
And what I like about Starfish is it's not just seafood.
Yeah.
You know, I think they have a half a dozen different oyster preparations. Raw, roasted, grilled, fried, probably a couple others. But they have that steak tartare with the crispy shallots. They have that lamb T-bone, so that it's flexible in a way that other seafood restaurants have not always been. And in a year that's seen three very high-profile seafood restaurants close, every time I go to Starfish, it's busy. So it's clearly connecting with people.
I would agree.
Nathan, why don't you talk a little bit easy for me to say. Nathan, why don't you talk a little bit about what you liked about Riel?
It's a really good kind of a upscale neighborhood restaurant for Montrose. It's done with a high level execution. And they recently started doing a brunch, it's one of my favorite brunches in town. One of my favorite dishes they do is this kind of like ham and cheese croquettes with like a cheese airy bechamel sauce. It's like their take on like a croque madame. It was really good. And then when they opened, they had this borscht that everybody thought was a joke and was fantastic.
Yeah, the borscht is back on the menu now that the
weather's
cooled off a little bit.
Now the weather's cold. It is worth getting, worth converting to a borscht lover. Pretty much everything I've had there has been very good. They take simple dishes, execute them at a very high level. And then it's just a really cool looking kind of small restaurant.
And then, Shanna, I know you mentioned Field and Tides, and yeah. I see Riel and Field and Tides as kind of two sides of a similar coin, right? They both have young chefs who are opening their own places for the first time. You know, Riel has those croquettes that Nathan talked about. Field and Tides has those pimento cheese fritters that are kind of mandatory. Mm-hmm. They both do some seafood stuff pretty well. What is it about Field and Tides that elevated it for you?
I think the number one, the concept, the fact that he has the field and the tide and how Chef Travis executes, you know, I've been following him around as he's, you know, going from from others' restaurant to now his own restaurant, and he's just always consistent, and they have a killer cocktail program. It's a great neighborhood spot. Three checks for me.
And then, of course, I am emotionally attached to Oxbow 7 a little bit because it was announced. Brian Caswell and Jennifer Caswell came on this show to announce it, so I do feel a certain tie to it. Mary, you may not be quite as emotionally invested in it, but it did make your list. What is it about that restaurant that stands out?
There's several things that stand out. First of all, the menu. When we went, we literally tried every single dish on the menu. We did a menu takedown, and his caviar dish was kind of an ode to the South, but a reinterpretation of a standard caviar dish with the chips, homemade chips. The desserts are amazing. The wine was good. Brian, the way that he described the concept and the menu and the execution of it was really, really was a full circle moment. It brought him home to downtown. I started eating his food at John George, and there's still some fish dishes, the crispy snapper that was stunning, I thought, and a beautiful decor. They're making restaurants relevant downtown, which really hasn't happened in the past, I would say. And I love the concept overall.
Yeah, I know Brian wouldn't want us to say that it's a comeback and maybe a reinvigoration of what he did at Reef, but Nathan, it is kind of, I mean,
it's
Brian Caswell reasserting himself as one of the city's best chefs.
Yeah, it's Brian getting back into the kitchen, getting comfortable making new dishes, cooking again, and really putting his soul into food again that he hasn't done since he really created the menu at Reef originally. And you can tell, I mean, the food is good. It really is good. And the East Texas caviar that you mentioned it would be in my top three dishes of the year. It was that good. Mm.
And I feel that way about the Castanet Bun Ryu, which is one of my favorite dishes, that crab broth with the tomato and crab cake, mm-hmm. just so layered, like so complex, and yet like just very, very satisfying to eat. Felice, maybe what was one of your top dishes at a restaurant that didn't make your top three?
Oh, that didn't make my top three?
Yeah, what was your favorite dish from a restaurant? Like,
yeah, because my top dish was the baller board. I'm just going to go and throw that out there.
Like, No.
It was
no.
Meat all day, every day. That was like my top dish. Probably, come back to me. I'll have to think about that because baller board was mine. Just Nathan sticky. Is like chomping at the bit.
Nathan is chomping at Nathan is chomping at the bit. So I'm going to ask Shanna what her instead. I'm going to ask Shanna what her top dish is.
Well, mine was the Tapa di Lomo, the 4-pound ribeye cap from Saltillo. It is fantastic. I have gone not once but twice to enjoy that with a group of friends, and you do need a group of friends. It's just fantastic. It's consistent. It's seasoned well. You know, we tried to ask for the secret, you know, secret seasoning, but couldn't quite get that on the first two rounds. But, you know, I'm going to keep trying. Fantastic.
Nathan, I know for your wife's birthday, you guys went and took that thing down. What You're a meat lover. What is it about that steak that just makes it so good?
Yeah, my family goes to Saltillo a couple times a year for the ribeye cap. It's 4+ pounds of just the spinalis of the ribeye. It's best, in my opinion, it's probably the best steak in the entire city, or at least tied. It is ridiculously good.
Yeah.
It's just a simply seasoned spinalis, which is the most tender piece of, you know, cow there is, and it's huge and it's tasty. It is delicious. Go do it, everyone in the city. Plus, you get to eat all this delicious Mexican food with it. Their enchiladas are fantastic. Their mole is really good. So it's a really good steak experience in my mind. Saltillo is one of the better restaurants in the city, and it's still kind of undiscovered to this day.
I agree with that. It's very under the radar, but it is definitely in my top 10.
Yeah. One of my classics.
All right. Well, we'll come back to that. I want to talk about some of the dishes that we really like this year before we do that. Mary, what were your picks for the top dishes of the year?
The tomato toast at Theodore Rex for me is probably my favorite dish, and I know that's a very small, light bite, but I'm loving chef's interpretation of a more approachable restaurant that you can pop in without a reservation, that it's a la carte, that the price points are affordable, it's a neighborhood restaurant. This is something way more approachable for somebody like myself than maybe Oxheart would have been. So all of the small plates, but the tomato toast is a standout for me.
All right, Nathan, now it's your turn. What was your favorite dish of the year?
So if we're talking about restaurants, new restaurants that didn't make my top three, it would be the Crispy Pork Belly at Aki. That pork belly,
that was my number two, but that was solid.
Yeah, that pork belly, sadly, I had to share it with several people, but I would have ordered 3 or 4 orders by myself. It is fantastic. It is crispy and soft inside, but I don't know if I've said this once or twice, but it's crispy. It's crispy, it's crispy, it's crispy. It is delicious. It's snap, crackle, crunch. It's great.
Nathan, tell us how you really feel.
Yeah, it's delicious.
It's good.
Delicious.
Clearly.
You know, and playing with texture and including being thoughtful about the way the texture is included in dishes was something I really liked about Yawacho, which is a restaurant that we haven't talked about yet, but that crispy chung fun with the fried bean curd, or the scallop shumai that had a crispy element to it. You know, it's difficult to say, hey, you should go spend $30 or $40 or $50 a person on dim sum when you can absolutely feast in Chinatown for $15-$20 a person. But I really do think there is something about Yawacha that elevates that cuisine and just makes the expense worth it.
Yawacha is definitely, in my opinion, the best dim sum in the city. The price difference can give you pause. You know, do you want to spend, you know, $100 a person? Or do you want to spend 15?
They have a prefix that they started a month or two ago, $30. Yeah,
the $30 a person.
And I did that last week, and it's solid.
But plus you get the complete experience too, right? Like for me, when you're talking about doing the dim sum, sometimes you got to go to different places to like, okay, I want this, I want that. There, you're in one spot, and you get it all right there. So, I mean, I think it's if you're an experienced person, you have no problem.
Yeah, they've recently started, like you said, Mary, it's around $30 for lunch, comes with your own pot of tea and a dessert. And their desserts are really, not only beautiful, but they're very good.
Their tea selection is really vast, too. They probably have a couple dozen teas to pick from that are all beautifully done.
All right, and there is one other dish I kind of want to talk about. I think it's a restaurant that's maybe flying just a little bit under the radar. what Arash Karat did at Beaver's Westheimer to completely reimagine that concept to give it legitimate barbecue chops has been pretty impressive. It's a restaurant I've dined at several times. Those barbecue brisket tacos that he made initially for the Houston versus the Houston Barbecue Throwdown, and then they were so good that he put them on the menu with the beef fat tortillas and the crema and the pickled onions. Just a really smart interpretation of Houston cuisine, a little barbecue, a little Tex-Mex, a little of his own ingenuity. It's something that I could eat again and again.
Yeah, Arash is a chef I think we're going to see around the city in a lot of different capacities doing some really great food for years to come.
Yeah, we agree.
He's killing it. People are, like you're saying, people are just kind of recognizing who he is.
Yeah.
He's in the front. He's winning all these contests because he kicks butt. His food is amazing.
And he's having fun doing it. Like, how many times have we walked up to him at an event, you know, walk around tasting type of event, and he's just like, you know, taking selfies and talking about the food. He's a really, really fun guy, and that shows in what he's producing.
Yeah, Space City Cowboy on Instagram, a very entertaining follow.
Yeah, he's a chef that restaurateurs are definitely asking about, saying, what's he up to?
Yeah, what's he? Is he happy? Yeah. I had one restaurateur.
Is he happy?
Is he happy at Beaver's? And I said, I assume that he's happy. It's not like I am not an employment service. He looks like a
happy guy.
Right. He seems like a happy guy, but money talks, I think, is the short answer version of that. Mm-hmm. We talked about Saltillo as an established restaurant that we enjoyed as sort of rediscovered in 2017. Who has a pick for another restaurant Mary Good. Perfect. What was your pick for a restaurant that you sort of reconnected with this year?
BCN is still a relatively new restaurant, but I feel like for me, they are knocking it out of the park as far as service, their beverage program, gin and tonics, their entire menu is beautifully executed. And the chef and his wife are doing an incredible, incredible job there. You can do seafood there. You can do traditional Spanish. You can have a steak. The wine list is 100% Spanish. I like the authenticity of it, and the experience there is first rate.
Yeah, I mean, that is a restaurant I feel like I would like to eat at more often. It is difficult to book a table there, and it is a very expensive meal, which is a little bit hard for me. Nathan, I know you went initially shortly after it opened. I know you didn't have a good experience. Your wife has vowed never to return, but it was number two on Allison's list. Mary just gave it a ringing endorsement. Are you ready to give BCN another shot?
Hey, I'm always willing to give a restaurant another shot after a little bit of time. My wife, on the other hand, that bridge has burned so hard that the space and time where a bridge could be built has disintegrated. It's not possible for my wife to even... That place doesn't exist anymore in her mind.
That is, wow.
Yeah, sometimes it's like that.
So I would be dining on my own, and my wife would be angry at me for about a week. But I would go. The friend that I went with, his wife would also be angry at me for a week. It was that bad of an experience. There was a lot of money spent. A drastically large sum of money was spent for a very... I'll say subpar to be nice experience, but that does not mesh with virtually every person's experience that I've talked to.
So we'll go when she's out of town.
Yeah.
And then you can just hide the credit card bill when it comes in.
I'll buy and then it won't show up.
That's pretty much the case, invite
me and a couple of other people.
Yeah, I definitely want to give it another try. I've heard great things from virtually everyone that has been there other than me. So I do want to try it.
All right. And then, Shanna, I know we talked about Saltillo. Did you have another restaurant that you revisited and reconnected with this year?
Yeah, Kieran's. I mean, even though I know she newly opened her new wonderful location, you know, she has been around and continuously putting out great food for years. Matter of fact, she was one of the first interviews that Felice and I had when we first started Urban Swank almost 7 years ago. She is like our food mother. She's fantastic. her passion is unwavered. Every time you see her, she's just, you know, going table to table. She's like the executive chef. She's the GM. She's the waitress. She's everything. And her food is always so good, so fresh, fresh ingredients. And as she told us on our last visit, I don't worry about how much time I spend in the kitchen. My product needs to be good and consistent every single time.
That's a great comment. I love that coming from her.
Yeah, she's fantastic. We love her.
All right, let's take a little bit of a break, and then we will be right back to talk about the restaurants that we will miss that close this year and maybe some of our worst dining experiences. So stick around.
You're listening to What's Eric Eating?
So let's pick up the conversation with what I'm describing as the saddest shutter, the restaurants that we will miss the most in 2017. I'm gonna start off because I'm worried that one of y'all is gonna steal this from me.
Of course, it's
definitely Bernadine's for me. I just, you know, I like to say that I don't have long-term relationships with restaurants. I tend to have sort of six-month flings with places.
Hit it and quit it.
Hit it and quit it. That's just the way, you know.
How you roll.
That's how I roll when it comes to restaurants. It's a nature of my job, I guess. But Bernadine's was a place I kept going back to again and again. With friends, with family, with people in the restaurant industry. I always loved Graham Laborde's food there. And, you know, I can kind of replace it with parts of the menu at a place like Riel or State of Race or even Field and Tides. But it's not quite the same. Nothing comes together quite like that for me. So, you know, one of these, I know Graham is doing great work with Ronnie Killen right now. Had him on the show a few weeks ago to talk about some of that. But one of these days he's going to open his own place, and I'm going to be a very happy man. Felice, let me turn to you. What restaurant that closed this year will you miss?
I'll miss Holly's. I will miss that duck gumbo and that coconut cake.
Can we have a
moment of silence just for those two dishes?
Yeah.
Okay, thank you. Yeah, I will. I was so upset. I was like, oh my God, I won't get that anymore. I mean, I saw it kind of coming. However, I'm still bummed out about it.
Nathan, how about you?
You know, ever since Foreign Correspondents closed in 2016, I don't think there's been anything that has hit me like, oh, that's one of my favorite restaurants. But the barbecue closure in Edo,
Papa Charlie's,
that one, just because he's such a nice guy, you know, small family business type of thing. I was kind of, you know, I like to sit there and chat with him. I didn't get to go there that often because it wasn't my kind of local barbecue place. But that one was sad just because, you know, I knew the guy.
Yeah.
And I think that's something we talked about on last week's show is that it's hard. You know, I was going to Papa Charlie's quite a bit when it opened. Then the Pit Room opened very close to where I live. And I don't go to a lot of barbecue restaurants that aren't the Pit Room now because it's so good and so close.
Yeah, the Pit Room is pretty much the closest one for me. I've got Regal's kind of similar distance, so I'm split between those two if I want local barbecue. I try to go to other ones I want to support too, but I mean there's several of them now, so you know, if you want somebody to stay open, you gotta go give them your money.
Yeah.
And then Shanna, what about you? What restaurant will you miss?
Glass Wall. It was something, I think we have a lot of memories there. We have a lot of good eating memories there. Even some dancing on tables will go unnamed and undiscussed. But we have fun there. The food was good. And it was a place that I wish I would have gone to before they shuttered. But it will be missed. And I will remember all the great memories I shared.
All right, Mary Clarkson, that brings us to you.
All right, I'm going to piggyback on your Bernadine's Hunky Dory because I love Richard Knight. I mean, he's one of my favorite chefs, and you can still see him around town at various pop-ups and whatnot, but I miss his cooking and I miss his presence, and we all need some more Richard Knight in our life.
All right, so we've been very positive. We've been very upbeat throughout this whole show, but this is the moment that everybody's like fast-forwarding to. Let's talk about the dishes that disappointed us. As I wrote in the note I sent y'all, what restaurant will you never go back to? Nathan, there's a very clear number one. For the
we know where Nathan won't go and can't go.
Well, no.
I've got a separate one. Bud's Barbecue may have been the worst food I've had.
Certainly this year.
Yeah, definitely this year. Outside of cooked by a blind person. Well, I say that, you know, that's not fair because there's obviously many that could cook better food than that.
Yeah, Christine Ha, the MasterChef winner.
Well, I don't think it would take somebody that talented to do that. It was just terrible. The food tasted like it had been sitting, you know, in an unrefrigerated container for a week. It was
talk about the progression of barbecue and the ever more places serving Central Texas high quality, you know, heavily seasoned, heavily smoked meat. Bud's was just the total opposite. Very lean, no seasoning that we could detect, no smoke flavor. It has a great location at Avenida Houston with some restaurants that I, near some places that I really like. Like I think the new Grotto is actually like a kind of a pleasant surprise, but I friends don't let friends eat at Bud's Barbecue.
So Bud's looked like they once went to a Dickie's Barbecue and said, I can almost be as good as this.
Oh my God.
I can do half as good as this.
And so they succeeded.
Yeah. Well, maybe. They were almost there.
Half as good as Dickie's is probably a pretty accurate description for Bud's.
So let me open up in one of the most expensive places in all of Houston and have, I mean, was there any other people eating there at lunchtime in downtown?
I think there was one, like not one table. Like literally,
oh, that guy's whose taste buds must have been burned off of his entire body. Yeah, it was that terrible.
It was very memorable for all the wrong reasons. Felice, what about you? I know you had a candidate for restaurant you will not be returning to.
Yeah, Poke Eatery. It was.
Is this in a Randall's?
Yeah, like
no.
It's
off of I-10. It's off of.
All right, so how does Poke go wrong? Because.
Right, exactly, right? So, first of all, let's start with it being hot.
Oh.
Yeah, I was like, it wasn't supposed to be hot, but it's, like, it's been out all day. What is going on? It was awful. It was awful. And then the person looked at me as if there was something wrong with me to go on to just tell me, what they thought, well, so Poke, they're giving me the craze and the tradition. I'm like, sweetie, this is the worst Poke in Houston, and it's not supposed to be hot. And once I looked over, because I was very clear on what I wanted, it was kind of midday, I was trying to get my stuff. I look over at some of the other fish, and I'm like, okay, well, why would I expect it not to be hot? Because this fish is gray. Like, it was just horrible. I'll never go back. And, you know, I'm wondering how long they're going to be open because it was that bad.
I've had a few instances in some of the better poke places in Houston where the rice was served a little too hot. So then the poke gets a little, you know, the fish gets a little warm a little too quick. But it's rare.
Yeah, the rice was so far away from this poke. Because, see, I don't like my food to – I want to mix it, so that's not the case.
Yeah.
It was – wasn't the rice.
No. This was a separate
incident. Okay.
Yeah. I've never been to that Randall's.
I thought you were trying to help him. I thought you were trying to help him out a little bit.
I've never been to that Fiesta where you got your poke.
Shanna, how about you? Did you have a dish that, or an experience that has burned a restaurant forever for you?
I mean, I hate to say forever because it just seems so permanent. But I remember leaving Harold's in the Heights. And I went there for brunch, and I've tried on a couple of occasions to really love the food. And that brunch, I remember calling Felice and being mad. Like, I was mad that it was that bad. Oversalted, having to prove that it was oversalted, like literally giving someone a fork or spoon and saying, put this in your mouth and taste it. It's oversalted. And then them literally gagging when they tasted it. It was just like, I want it to be great, but it's just, that experience was literally, and I took my mother with me for brunch that day, and I was literally mad when I left.
Oh, no, that's always the worst.
It's horrible.
You feel like your credibility as someone who knows.
Yes, because I was taking her like, oh, I'm going to take you to brunch. You know, they had started a new brunch menu. Let me take you. Oh, and she's like, oh, yeah, well, you, this is what you do. It's going to be good. And she's looking across the table at me, rolling her eyes, you know, like, is this, was this the place that you were talking about taking me to? I was literally embarrassed that my mother, see, I could deal with it and just not come back for brunch. But my mom is like literally till this day, like questioning my like decisions for locations to eat. It's not right.
And well, and
that is, you know,
devastated.
Too.
I'm devastated.
And they're so nice, right? Allie Jarrett, the owner, is great.
Yes, I mean, they've been.
But Chef wasn't there that day,
right? Yeah, Chef was not there. Now, this is not a Chef Antoine situation. We have had his food. We've had a nice farm dinner. It's not that. I think it was more the experience. I think that they were in the middle of maybe getting ready for, I don't know, getting ready to start lunch. I just know that everything we had wasn't prepared right, and the service was horrible. And the managers that were on duty were literally non-existent and didn't care. It was just a bad experience. I hope at some point I can go back. I don't want to say I'll never return. I'm just, like, my mom is, like, she'll never come. I'll have to, like, see.
Well, it was enough for me not to go. I'm like, okay, well, we'll go.
Right. So it's like, it's definitely not a never, but it's something that I have to revisit.
All right, Mary, I think you're about to get kicked off the show with this hot take, so. I'm just going to stand back and let you let fly.
No, I'm going to moderate myself. My mother said, if you don't have anything nice to say, don't say anything at all. So,
where is she every other day of your life?
Always in my thoughts and texting me and reminding me of all of these pointers. Chef Olivia and I like to go out and try new restaurants, usually on Sundays or Mondays when we're off. And we have a history of whenever he's with me, we tend to have a much worse experience than if I'm by myself or with another group of people. So I will throw him under the bus just for a moment. We went to Rio when they first opened, and I have been back since and had better experiences. But the night that Chef and I went was not a good moment for the food side. The service was good. The wine list was good. But the crudo and the frog legs didn't have a lot of seasoning or any seasoning. So other than that, I will return, but those were misses for me.
And there's one other place that kind of stands out for me. I had a pretty disastrous experience at Balls Out Burger. I had a very promising experience there, before it opened, with the owner sitting in the room. And then I came back just to see, like, is it really that good? Can it be that consistent? Because it's such a simple thing, that New York style diner cheeseburger that's cooked in the beef fat. It's, you know, the toppings. They have since added bacon, to their credit, but the toppings are so simple, and it's such a pure thing. And it just wasn't seasoned well. It wasn't cooked well. It took way too long to come out. And I remember I wrote about this. I remember sitting there and one of the cooks was talking to one of the other employees just within my earshot, but not paying any attention to me. And he said, I don't know why people keep saying this sucks. Like, we're working our butts off. And I had that kind of like sitting in the front of the classroom moment where I wanted to just raise my hand and be like, I know, pick me. But I also didn't want to get punched in the face. So I kept it to myself. But to their credit, I have seen recently on Facebook people I know who like to dine out, friends of mine whose opinions I respect, say that it's good, that it merits a revisit. And I keep thinking about it, you know, when I have a night to myself. Or
it's been a
few months since that happened, and I just can't quite bring myself to make the commitment. I don't want to eat another burger like I ate that one time.
Yeah, when I went, it was pretty good. I remember you had your bad experience, and I mean, you talked about it, and I was kind of scared to go. But I mean, I was like, okay, I had no expectations, right? Like, if it was awful, I'm like, well, I already knew it was going to be awful. But it was anything, you know, south of awful, hey, I was pretty good. And it turned out pretty good. So, you know,
it was just south of awful.
It was north of awful.
North of awful.
All right. So let's take one more break, and then let's come back and talk about some of what we're looking forward to next year.
You're listening to What's Eric Eating?
So to wrap things up, let's talk a little bit about what we are looking forward to next year. Nathan, why don't you start?
So this is kind of a double-edged sword. I am looking forward to the new Chris Shepherd. Every restaurant in Houston is going to turn into a steakhouse restaurant. But at the same time, the fact that, you know, we're only going to have steakhouses in Houston pretty soon is kind of disappointing. I would like
I mean, we'll still have burger places and Tex-Mex and stuff.
That's true. It's going to be the three. But, you know, I would like to eat other food on occasion.
But, you know, and we talked about this. Shannon Felice and I talked about this on last week's show, that there is room for steakhouses that do a good job, and that 1/5 and now Georgia James, you know, searing the meat on cast iron, buying really good Texas beef, mixing up the sides a little bit, like those are things worth patronizing.
Well, that's why I'm looking forward to it. If we could replace a lot of these mediocre steakhouses with really well done ones and just not open new ones, I would be ecstatic. But I'm just afraid that's not going to happen. We're just going to keep opening new ones. It's kind of like a virus instead of a, you know.
But what will happen is we'll keep opening new ones, and the ones that aren't so good,
yeah,
they're going to close.
You know, we said that 10 years ago, and it never happened.
They're still there?
Yeah.
Del Frisco's is still around.
Yeah.
Well, hey, no, I had, okay. No.
Hey, I had the shade, Mary.
I had a very good meal at Del Frisco's not that long ago.
I'm not going to name any of them. I work for some of them, so.
But there are national chain steakhouses serving very similar menus. You know, Nathan, when you were on the show a couple weeks ago, we rattled them off. They are up and down Westheimer, all over the Galleria area.
Smith and Malinsky could go.
Smith and Malinsky could go.
Yeah,
I agree with that.
We missed about Smith and Malinsky's. We missed Pappas. We missed Ruth Chris. So we rattled off 10 and we missed another 3 or 4. That's how many there are up and down the Galleria.
It's called expense accounts.
And then we didn't even name any of the like 12 Brazilian steakhouses same area.
Yeah.
True. There are a lot in this area.
So there's a lot of places to eat unhealthy quantities of red meat in this town.
And I'm happy about it.
Me too.
Felice, I know you're excited about Georgia James. What else are you looking forward to?
I'm excited about Georgia James. If Tesla can get it together and bring Knife here, Steel, is it Steel? I know it's
Knife. It's John Tesar. It's Knife, and it is delayed. I know that's what I'm saying.
Yeah, it'll be like 2017.
And so it keeps being delayed more. So that was one of the ones I was looking forward to, and of course, Truth Barbecue.
True.
Dun, dun, dun,
dun. That is the truth.
That's the truth.
Yeah, that is the truth.
That's the truth.
Yeah, we had Leonard on the show a while back. I'm not sure that he was the best podcast guest in the world, but his passion for what he does and how he does it is pretty incredible.
You know, that guy.
And I think we both lost the bet, Eric, because it should have been open. You know, we made a bet on when it would be open.
Yeah, I think we're now looking like in the February, March kind of.
Yeah, we lost that bet.
Yeah, both lost. Okay.
Don't expect to skip the line at Truth, man.
Yeah. That was Eric that said that.
Your hall pass has been revoked, right, buddy.
Leonard.
Yeah, so
I thought you were a great podcast guest. I'm just saying.
Oh, gosh.
But his passion for what he does is evident in the quality of the food that he serves. I'm a huge Truth fan. And even with an increasingly crowded market for good barbecue in Houston, I think it's going to be a very welcome, very popular addition.
That's what you call backtracking.
Mm-hmm. Way to go.
It's called a compliment, not a compliment.
Shanna, I'm going to stop digging this hole. I'm going to turn it over
to you. Turn it over to me. Let me try to fix this. No, because I love everything that Ryan Para and Morgan Weber do. They have the three concepts coming to East Downtown. I think one's a bar, there's a restaurant, there's a pizzeria. I love their stuff. We love Cultivari. We love Revival Market. I'm just ready for whatever they have. I love all their stuff.
Mary, how about you?
Mike Sammons is cooking up something in Edu, and I don't know all the details, but I know it's coming this year. So I'm excited about whatever that will be.
Oh, can I add one more? Just because of course. Because I'm just thinking, what about the, I'm interested just to see how the restaurant that Aisha Curry is bringing, International Smoke?
Yeah, with Michael Mina.
Yeah, I'm interested just to, because there's so much, like, she's so hot right now. You know, I want to just see if it's the truth, is the hype is still all legit, you know?
Yeah, and then on a kind of a smaller scale, I'm really excited about Flying Pho. Christopher Wong, the owner of Ninja Ramen, doing Northern style pho, a cleaner broth, less aromatic, less heavily spiced. I don't quite know what that's going to look like or, more importantly, taste like. But I always enjoy my visits to Ninja Ramen. He's succeeded kind of by doing his own thing, not by serving the same style of tonkatsu broth that most other ramen restaurants around town serve. And he's got that kind of quirky sense of humor. I just think it's going to come together really well.
Well, it'll be cool to see what's the pho, you know? If it's pho.
That was terrible.
Sorry, I had to go there. Sorry, I had to go there.
What the, oh gosh. You guys are hilarious.
So I think that about wraps up the topics that I wanted to cover. Felice, do you have a final thought?
I'm just looking forward to 2018's food. I've requested Elastics for Christmas because I know a lot of new restaurants are opening. And, oh, y'all were talking about meats and what were you saying, steakhouses and burger places.
Burgers. Tex-Mex.
So we have to say goodnight, Charlie. I'm looking forward to some Tex-Mex. I'm just saying.
Tacos and beer.
That's
and
all
dancing.
I'm saying. That's it.
Nathan, how about you? What do you see for the future of 2018? Are we going to slow the rate of closures, or are they going to continue? What's your big prediction?
I think we'll have some closures in the beginning of 2018 for sure. But I think it'll stem from there. I think there'll be closures. I think people will have a hard time saying they're from Harvey now. But the rent is just so outrageous. I think that's going to have a lot to do with it. The labor market in Houston is getting crazy. There's not enough people, people to fill these jobs, and there's so many restaurants opening. Hopefully a lot of these, you know, a lot of these really cool restaurants, the potential Italian restaurants, potential Italian restaurant in downtown from the B&B Butchers guy seems to be really exciting. I'm looking forward to that. And then I wanted to throw a shout out to La Table or La Table, depending on who pronounces it.
Right.
That's one of my my favorite restaurants in the city.
I agree.
So I think people should give that a try if they haven't.
Yeah, we didn't mention the $200 cognac steak as one of the dishes of the year, but certainly one of the most decadent steaks in the city, and something that I would love to eat again.
Yeah, Anna, it's more about the cheese souffle for me, though.
Yeah, that cheese souffle is very strong.
Make sure to get truffles on it.
Shannon, how about you? What's your big prediction for next year in dining?
I just feel like we saw this year an emergence of people kind of outside of Houston kind of getting it that we were a legit food scene. And I want people to quit, like, maybe 2018 will be, oh, I didn't know that Houston was a legit food scene. I'm kind of tired of hearing that with people that are coming in town. I want people to just know that we're legit, know that we're diverse, and know whatever you bring here, if it's good, it's going to work. Just recognize us as the city of food, period.
All right, Mary, we know that French food has become trendy nationally. We've seen a couple of new French openings in Lucienne and Maison Pucci Bistro here in the last couple of months. Is 2018 the year that Houstonians that French food blows up in Houston?
I don't know if it's the year that French food blows up in Houston. Let's hope that people expand their horizons to French, European, classic dishes, but as well as contemporary. I think there's room for new entrants as long as people embrace what these chefs are putting out. The chefs are listening to the consumer, and that's what really matters. More casual dining, though, is where it's going to be.
So for me, if 2017 was the year that the rest of the country discovered how awesome Hugo Ortega is, he won a James Beard Award. He's partnering on a new restaurant with Michael Mina. He was just featured on CBS Sunday Morning. My hope for 2018 is that the rest of the country discovers how awesome Ryan Parra is, that Indianola is a big hit, that Cultivari continues to be excellent, and that the rumors that he and Morgan are maybe kicking the tires on properties in Montrose is true, and that I have a agricultural hospitality concept that I can, at least in theory, walk to. That does it for this week's episode. Let me just thank my co-hosts, Shanna Jones and Felice Sloan from Urban Swank. You can follow them on all social platforms, Facebook, Twitter, Pinterest, Instagram, Urban Swank, and of course, urbanswank.com, constantly updated. Nathan Ketchum, we can follow you on Twitter at H-Town Food Junkie, at least until we finally shame you into a less ridiculous Twitter handle. And maybe on Instagram.
It takes work to come up with a new one, man.
All right, submit your... You can email me, Eric, E-R-I-C, at culturemap.com with new ideas for Nathan's Twitter handle. Mary Clarkson, LaOlivierHouston.com. I know you've got big plans for New Year's Eve, yes, at the restaurant?
Yes, we do. We are going to mirror our kind of Christmas Eve category of doing high-low. So fried chicken and Chateaubriand are the themes of New Year's Eve.
We like.
You can make your reservations for that by calling the restaurant. And, of course, you can follow me on Twitter at eSandler, on Instagram at Eric Sandler. You can read culturemap.com for my picks for the best restaurants of 2017, including a couple of places we didn't get to on this episode of the podcast. Of course, you can subscribe to this podcast on iTunes and Google Play. You can rate it. You can leave a comment. But like Katie Nolan always says, only if they're 5 stars and only if they're nice. Thanks so much for listening.
Woot woot.
It's a wrap, guys.